just when you thought there was no hope for baby boomers. It's the Rational Boomer Podcast. Logic, common sense, compassion. Yeah, who knew? Now, here's Mike.
We are back on the Rational Boomer Podcast. Hopefully your day is going well. It is Thursday. Had kind of an interesting day yesterday. Plenty of things to talk about. Before we get to that, I got some bad news for you. Normally on Thursdays, Old Soul would be with us, but she's not going to be here today. You're going to be stuck with just me. Old Soul contacted me yesterday and she said, "I'm sorry, but I can't make it on the show this week. I got some shit." Now, she told me a few things, and I'm not going to go into details of what she's got going on because it really doesn't matter. But we'll miss Old Soul today. I'll do my best to try to get through it, and I'm sure Old Soul will be back next week. So that's the bad news. That's what we've got. Anyhow, we have emails, as we commonly do, and we can get to those right away. First one starts out, "Hi, Mike. On a recent show, you mentioned things that Trump LaFucks have said but have never come true. I know we have all heard some amazing things from them. I wonder if we should gather a list of these things as a record of how whacked they are. I have a few. In June of 2020, I ran into a longtime friend who had retired and moved to central Wisconsin. As he spoke about current events, I realized the Kool-Aid must be extra strong there. I smiled and nodded as he told me. Number one, Trump would be regaining the White House in August of 2020. JFK Jr. would be his VP. Surprisingly, that one didn't work out. Number two, Trump would then end cancer because he would force Big Pharma to release all the cancer-curing drugs that they have been hiding from us. He would make sure we could get the drugs for free. Still cancer. Pharma's not free. And there are no cancer-curing drugs. So that one was wrong. Okay, that's two. Number three, there would soon be military tribunals to prosecute Hillary, Bill, and Obama. He told me to look for a video showing how they're all given summons during H.W. Bush's funeral. Executions are expected. Yeah, I've been hearing that one for a long time, and they talk about some video where everybody was handed a little card at George H.W. Bush's funeral, and everybody kind of looks, I don't know, not excited about it, maybe even a little upset about it. So everybody's come to these conspiracy theories. Oh, it's bad news. You're next, or whatever the fuck they thought it was. But funny, since that time, nothing has come to pass. There are no tribunals. Bill and Hillary and Obama have not been tried, and no one's been executed. Big surprise. Number four, either the Biden, Hillary, or Bill that we see on TV are clones. Maybe all of them. I don't recall exactly. I remember seeing this. And people, you know, these conspiracy theories, there are people even today still repeating these conspiracy theories. I can't tell you how many people have told me that's not really Joe Biden. That's Jim Carrey playing Joe Biden. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Or if you look at Joe Biden's ears, they're not quite the same as what they were 10 years ago. Wow. How fucking whacked out do you have to be? Now, he goes on to say, "I know there were more. I haven't seen my friends since then, so I haven't had the chance to point out that none of this happened. I presumed he would have perfect explanations. Polls, I know this topic comes up often during your podcast. I recently had an interesting experience. I voted in my first presidential primary last month. I voted as any strategic thinking Democrat and cast my vote for Nikki Haley. What I didn't realize is by doing the local GOP now thinks I'm one of them." Yeah. Well, I'm getting all kinds of text messages from the GOP and how they'd ever think I was part of them. I don't know. They obviously don't watch YouTube or TikTok. Soon after the primary, a guy knocked on my door conducting a poll for Americans for Prosperity. As he asked me questions, I realized by the wording of the questions, the poll results were only to reinforce talking points for the local GOP. I particularly liked one question. Given that the current Democratic regime in the state of Minnesota has already squandered $30 billion surplus, are you in favor of their plan to increase taxes next year? See, this is what I'm saying about polls. How can you trust polls? You don't know who owns the polls. You don't know who's funding the polls. You don't know what their agenda is. You don't know who they're talking to. You don't know the questions they're asking. You don't know if the questions are skewed. And if you don't know if the final results are skewed, and this is a perfect example, that's kind of a leading question. I responded by saying I didn't think they squandered the surplus. He gave me a deer in the headlights look. He obviously expected a different response. After a couple of my other unexpected responses from me, he thanked me for my time and left. I doubt my answers made the poll. I'm guessing you're right. I also get mailings now from various GOP groups. It is sad to see how they make grand statements about our state Democratic legislation based on half-truths or lies. It is very sad that many people see these statements and allow their opinions to be shaped by them. I love the podcast. Keep up the great work, Tom. And I happen to know this Tom is somebody I would call a hood homie. Meaning he came from my neighborhood. He's a little younger than I am, but he came from my neighborhood. So we are amongst the same realm of the South Minneapolis Trump humpers, and they are many. I appreciate Tom bringing this to our attention. And, you know, I've said this before, I'm not a detail-oriented guy. I'm more of a big-picture guy. So when somebody like Tom or some of you other people like Eric and some other folks come with details, it's very helpful because I, you know, I can come up with facts and things, but I'm more talking in a bigger picture. And sometimes we need the details and remembrances like Tom brought us here. So, Tom, thank you very much. All right, the next one. This one came on the podcast page. And you only have limited space to leave a message. So she took a couple of spaces to finish it. And I would tell this person, keep writing on the podcast page. That's fine. But if you want a longer one or you want to go direct, just go to the rationalboomer@gmail.com email site. A lot of people go there and you're more than welcome to send emails, of which I will read on the air, as you can see. All right. This one says, hi, Mike. Back in 1972 or so, I'm 73 now, I was attacked by a dog. I was pregnant about 5.5 months. The attack resulted in my baby dying inside my body. The baby actually lived for about 24 hours before it died. The doctor then told me I have to have the fetus removed, DNC. I didn't understand exactly what that meant. I was so young and just didn't know much. But he said it needed to happen, so I agreed. My baby was removed, and my life was saved. Without that DNC, I would have died. My baby was already dead, and my next child would have never been born. What is happening now to women's rights sickens me and fills me with despair. I will fight for women's rights until I take my last breath. Patty. I'm sorry for your loss in that situation and the attack of the dog. 1972, I was about 12 years old then, and doesn't sound like you were older than I was, but still quite young. You know, that's the one thing that these people that are pro-life folks, they don't take into account extenuating circumstances, and they don't take into account the personal health and safety of the women involved in these abortions. It's like they suggest that every woman is having an abortion is just using this as a way to do away with not being responsible. And that's mostly not the case. Usually there's some medical reasons to it, and those medical reasons are important, even regarding the safety of the child and certainly the safety of the mother. Of course, we had this draconian abortion thing the other day where Arizona went back to 1864 to take a law from the Civil War era, draconian as anything, and they put that out there, and the Supreme Court agreed to it, which basically bans all abortions, save for the times when women are in physical danger should they have this baby. That's caused a lot of problems for Republicans, for Donald Trump, and he kind of fucked up his position on that. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. All right, the next one says, "Hi, Boomer. I just read something that confused me. We discussed earlier about the election system in California where one candidate can't run for two seats at the same time. Vince Fong decided to run for Kevin McCarthy's old seat while still running to keep his seat in the state legislature. It's been going through the courts here because Secretary of State Weber tried to remove him from the McCarthy race as he'd registered to run to keep his current seat first. This morning, I read that both a state court and an appellate court have found that there is no state law saying he can't run for both at the same time. There is a special election runoff in May that he will be in for the McCarthy seat. His opponent will also be a Republican, so that seat will stay red. I don't know yet when he can be seated. There is no word at this time whether Secretary of State will take it any further. This ruling will likely cause much confusion because of Katie Porter and Barbara Lee. I'll keep an eye on it and let you know what I find." And that's signed, Grandma Patty. She's written many times before. Thanks for that insight. Yeah, we've heard a lot of conflicting stories about that. It's kind of confusing, but of course it's politics. And everything about politics is fucking confusing. Things are heating up a little bit in the abortion issue. As I said, we had Arizona come out and dig deep into the archives and bring out an abortion ban from 1864. This is causing a lot of backlash. Even Republicans are upset by this. Donald Trump even said, I don't think that's a good idea. Donald Trump told reporters on Wednesday, now this is the interesting thing. Donald Trump said he thought Arizona went too far with this, but don't worry about it because the governor and everybody else, they'll figure this out. It'll be fine, as Donald Trump would say. But Donald Trump was kind of pushed into a corner, and he for once actually gave a direct answer to a direct question. And this one is going to cause him some problems. Donald Trump told reporters on Wednesday that he won't sign a national abortion ban if elected in November, but cleared up nothing about whether he or his appointees would implement a backdoor plan. When asked in a press gaggle in Georgia if he would sign a federal abortion ban, Trump responded no and shook his head, according to CNN's Kristen Holmes. Now, Donald Trump has been intentionally vague about his stance on abortion since it's become apparent that the topic is a losing issue for Republicans. Oh, you're just figuring that out now? I could have told you that in 2022 when it cost them the midterms. But the former president has had a long history of anti-abortion policy and continues to align himself with some of the most extreme players in the anti-choice movement, many of whom would be part of his administration if reelected. Now, although he said he wouldn't sign a federal ban if Congress sent him one, Trump did not mention anything about the Comstock Act, a 151-year-old law that criminalizes sending obscene materials in the mail, which he could enforce to create a backdoor national abortion ban. Many of the current allies have laid out a policy agenda that includes revoking FDA approval for mifepristone, one of the two drugs used in medication abortion that can be received through the mail, and reviving the Comstock Act if he takes office in January. These Republicans, they like to dig deep. They like to go 100-plus years back to find something that fits their agenda. That should tell you something. we've said all along that the Republicans want to bring this country and women's rights back 100 years, and here we go, absolute proof of that. Now, earlier this week, the former president said in a statement that he was proud of his role in overturning Roe v. Wade, but he supports leaving abortion rights to the states. He also skillfully, I don't know if it was skillful, that he avoided the topic of national abortion ban in the statement, a move that was heavily criticized by abortion right advocates and opponents. There were previous reports that Trump was considering a national abortion ban around 15 to 16 weeks. You know, in order to placate national anti-abortion organizations that he's aligned himself with. But here's the deal. Donald Trump is in a decision where he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. And he put himself in this position. He says he will not sign a national abortion ban. And this, as I said, is to placate the pro-choice people. Because he's finally realized that the pro-choice people are about 75-80% of this country. And if he goes against them fully, he's going to get his ass kicked. Well, he's going to get his ass kicked anyway. But when he said he wouldn't sign a national abortion ban, that had to absolutely piss off the evangelicals and the radical right. They want a national abortion ban. They want it as draconian as it possibly can be. And so when Donald Trump says something like that, they're going to be pissed. So Donald Trump may end up losing out on some of his base because of that statement. And if Donald Trump thinks it's going to help him get more votes among the 75% pro-choice people, he's going to have a problem there because previously, actually on a couple of occasions, he said, I'm responsible for overturning Roe v. Wade. Actually, yesterday he said that while he said there was he wouldn't sign an abortion ban. He said, I'm very proud of the fact that after 52 years, everybody wanted to overturn Roe v. Wade and I did it. I'm the one responsible. That's what Donald Trump said. So Donald Trump has owned this. And the 75%, even if he said 15 weeks, that's not going to be enough because of two things. They know Donald Trump is responsible for overturning Roe v. Wade in the first place. We wouldn't be in this mess if not for Donald Trump and those judges he put in the Supreme Court. Secondly, we know one thing to be very true is that Donald Trump is a pathological liar. Donald Trump doesn't care about the abortion issue. All he cares about is getting votes, and he will say whatever he needs to say. But again, he's in a situation where he can't win for losing. He says he's against the abortion ban federally. The evangelicals and his base are going to hate him for it. And it's not going to be enough to get the people who already know that he's responsible for overturning Roe v. Wade. You cannot win in this situation. And I've said so many times, I think this issue, the abortion issue, is the biggest issue in the upcoming election. All this other stuff will play a part, but that issue is the big issue. It impacts the constitutional rights of 50% of this country, which is the women. And it pisses off 75% of this country, which is women and men who support Roe v. Wade. Donald Trump done fucked up when he dipped his toe into the waters of abortion. He probably should have kept quiet about it, but you know as well as I do, Donald Trump has a little trouble keeping quiet. Now, Michael Tyler, a spokesman for the Biden-Harris campaign, responded to Trump's Wednesday comment in an emailed statement. Donald Trump owns the suffering and chaos happening right now, including in Arizona, because he proudly overturned Roe, something he called an incredible thing and pretty amazing just today, Tyler said. Trump lies constantly about everything, but has one track record, banning abortion every chance he gets. The guy who wants to be a dictator on day one will use every tool at his disposal to ban abortion nationwide with or without Congress, and running away from reporters to his private jet like a coward doesn't change that reality. Although Trump supposedly supports leaving abortion rights to the states, he said Wednesday that the Arizona Supreme Court ruling that gives the go-ahead to a near-total abortion ban went too far. Give it to the states, so he does that, they do that, and Arizona fucks it up. See, Donald Trump loses in that regard as well. He also criticized Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' six-week abortion ban as a terrible mistake. Last year, which the state Supreme Court ruled last week, can take effect in May. Despite his best attempts to avoid abortion, Trump's fingerprints are all over the attacks on medication abortion, restrictions on in vitro fertilization, and state-level abortion bans. Now, when Trump was in the White House, he and his administration appointed and worked with some of the country's most ferocious anti-choice leaders who are now trying to ban abortion nationwide. He's trying to walk it back a little bit now because he finally, just finally realized, oh, this is a loser. This is what I'm saying. I don't understand the Republicans. The moment they overturned Roe v. Wade, they got their ass kicked in the 2022 midterms. Why weren't they smart enough to say, oh, this is a loser? We're going to pull back on this because we've got to change our ways here, or we're going to get our ass killed in 2024. They don't do that. They embrace it. They double down. They triple down. Donald Trump does the same thing. And it's going to cost them the election in a big fucking way. Now, if there's any question about whether Donald Trump is responsible for overturning Roe v. Wade, remember, Trump appointed three of the Supreme Court justices who were central in overturning Roe in 2022. He also appointed many far-right federal judges who have been integral in furthering anti-choice battles, including U.S. District Judge Matthew Kaczmarek, a devout Christian with extreme anti-abortion beliefs, who ruled that mifepristone should be taken off the market. Trump's administration tried to limit access to medication abortion during COVID-19's pandemic, asking the Supreme Court in 2020 to reinstate a requirement that would force women to obtain abortion pills in person. These fucks will do anything to make it difficult. And if Donald Trump is going to try to walk back his connection to abortion, he's going to have a tough time. Like I said, on many occasions, he said with pride that he's responsible for overturning Roe v. Wade. And he appointed those three Supreme Court justices to make sure it was done. Now, the fact of the matter is all the trials and tribulations and the dangers that women are in right now can be directed back to Donald Trump. He is the origin of this problem. And then you throw in the judges and you throw in the rabid Republican dumbfucks. And this is why we are where we are. There needs to be a national decision on abortion. But what that national decision needs to be is codifying Roe v. Wade. Now, once we get into the next term in January, after the Democrats have taken control of the House and the Senate and Joe Biden in the presidential office, we will be able to codify Roe v. Wade. And I'll guarantee you, the Democrats won't fuck up again. Because make no mistake, the Democrats did fuck up. They've had opportunities in the past to codify Roe v. Wade. They've been in the position, they've had the power, and they didn't do it. They got lazy. They figured, oh, this will never happen. Well, surprise, motherfucker, it did happen. And you need to fix your mistake. Because while the Republicans and Donald Trump are responsible for overturning Roe v. Wade, the Democrats have a part because they didn't do their job and codify Roe v. Wade when they had the opportunity. All right. Rebellious House Republicans on Wednesday turned back an effort. This is an embarrassment for the Republicans. Turned back an effort to renew an anti-terror surveillance law that's been used in the past to spy on Americans, leaving its fate up in the air less than 10 days before it's set to expire. Now, there was a fight over the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, and particularly the post-9/11 era spying provision, Section 702, was pitted both Republicans and Democrats worried about civil liberties against a similarly bipartisan group that sees the law as a crucial tool in the country's national security box or toolbox. Now, it was presumed the Republicans would vote for it, the Democrats would not. But 19 Republicans bucked party leaders and voted against allowing the renewal for the bill and amendments to be debated on the House floor, stalling its progress with a 193-228 vote. Well, why the fuck would they do that? That seems crazy. That's embarrassing. Now, the constitutional liberties of Americans have to come first. We don't bend the Constitution for anything, said Representative Bob Good. But why did this happen? Well, it seems hours before the vote, former President Donald Trump cheered the opposition on social media, calling on lawmakers to kill FISA. Wow. The Republicans didn't want that to happen. But Donald Trump came out of his ass saying, you need to not pass this. And of course, like obedient dogs, some of them did, and it didn't pass. Now, what you have to understand, FISA authorizes surveillance programs against foreign individuals abroad. But in eavesdropping on those communication, exchanges with U.S. citizens can also be captured, meaning critics say the program effectively allows backdoor searches of Americans' communications. Now, that's probably why the Democrats aren't for it. But this is all about the Republicans. This is exactly the kind of shit they want to do, but they couldn't even get that passed. And as I've told you before, the big problem with the Republicans, especially in the House, is they aren't unified. They're like two separate parties fighting against each other. Now, Tuesday's outcome was another defeat for Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, who attempted unsuccessfully to tread a thin line between competing FISA factions in his own conference. Remember Nancy Pelosi when she was Speaker of the House? She made a point to never bring anything to the floor for a vote unless she knows she was going to win. Apparently, Mike Johnson hasn't learned that trick because he's brought a few bills to the floor that didn't pass, and he was absolutely embarrassed. Now, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene has threatened to call a vote to take the speaker's gavel away from Johnson, a vote of no confidence. It would be similar to what happened to Kevin McCarthy. She has cited Johnson's stances on FISA, as well as whether to approve more aid to Ukraine in its fight against Russia. And she doesn't like this, so she wants to take Mike Johnson out. And I think a lot of Republicans have a bad taste in their mouth from doing this. There's such a short time left in the term. They haven't done anything at this point at all. It took a 3-4 weeks to get Mike Johnson in there when they kicked Kevin McCarthy out. And when you don't have a Speaker of the House, you are literally doing nothing in the House of Representatives. And how can they do that? Well, they can do it because they don't do much else. We've got to get the Ukraine funding, the Israeli funding, get that done. And then if they want to kick out Mike Johnson, that's fine. But the fact of the matter is we don't know that they'll have the votes to kick out Mike Johnson. There's a lot of Republicans that don't like Marjorie Taylor Greene and would probably vote against her. Secondly, since the Democrats are so adamant about getting this funding for Ukraine, a few of them might go over to Mike Johnson and say, listen, man, we don't care if you're here or not. You're pretty much impotent when you are here. But if you put up the Ukraine vote, we'll make sure you're covered when they try to kick you out. Don't be surprised if they try to cut that kind of deal. Mike Johnson is weak. He's always caved to the Democrats. He really doesn't have much choice but to work with the Democrats in spite of what MAGA says because of the division in the Republican Party. House Intelligence Committee Chair Mike Turner of Ohio and the White House have defended the program, sane reforms have been made in the past, and the further changes proposed by privacy advocates risk hurting the U.S. ability to keep track of terrorists. Now, Jake Sullivan of the White House National Security Advisor said, to protect the American people, we need to maintain this vital collection authority while strengthening its protective guardrails with the most robust set of reforms ever included in the legislation to reauthorize Section 702. This bill does that. Now, opponents for the bill said they didn't revolt Tuesday to embarrass Johnson, but were instead angry over what they saw as his ham-handed attempts to avoid upsetting Turner or House Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan, whose committee put forward a deeply revised FISA with a far stronger protections for privacy. Oh, and Donald Trump told them to not vote for it. That's what fucking happened. So once again, the Republicans are embarrassed by this incident, and it's pretty hilarious. They can't win for losing. They look stupid every time they do something. Doesn't matter if it's a normal bill or it's the investigations or the hearings into Joe Biden. Nothing they do works. This is why I wonder why people are so worried about November. When you got this apple dumpling gang of fucking political party, they aren't going to get anything right. Everything they do is wrong, and everything they do works against them in the upcoming election in November. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
On every show, I tell you that if you have questions, comments, or complaints, just reach out to me at rationalboomer@gmail.com. Those emails come directly to me, and your input is crucial to this show. The show is called Rational Boomer Podcast, but that's not to suggest that I'm the Rational Boomer. I am not. I am simply a Rational Boomer. All of you are Rational Boomers. Anybody of a like mind is a Rational Boomer. Strength comes in numbers and not through an individual. You have perceptions and insights that may have never occurred to me. This isn't a show about me. This is a show about us and gaining a voice in this country. There's 70 million baby boomers in this country. Yeah, I know the younger folks would prefer to push us aside. Every generation has done that. But we are a formidable force if we can get together and speak in one voice. This is why I encourage you to let your friends and family know about the Rational Boomer Podcast, not to satisfy my ego, but to give us more power, a stronger voice, to help right this ship we call the United States of America. Lastly, I'm offering the opportunity for my listeners to be on the show. Now, it could be 2 minutes, it could be a half hour, it could be the whole fucking show. I'd much rather have you on the show than somebody pimping a podcast or a book. I want to hear what you think. I want to know what you know. The Rational Boomer Podcast is all about us.
Well, we're about 4 days from Donald Trump's criminal trial in the Manhattan District, Monday, April 15th. And Donnie's getting a little squirrely. Yeah, he's nervous. And I told you this week is going to get a little crazy. He's going to be wiggling around like a wiggle worm trying to get out of it. And Donald Trump has filed motions on 3 consecutive days to try to delay or dismiss the case. He did it on Monday. After about 3 hours, the appellate court said no. On Tuesday, he did it again, tried to get a change of venue and that sort of shit. And within minutes, the appellate judge came back and said, no, that's bullshit. That's frivolous. And yesterday, he did it for a third time. And he's just recanting some of the things he's already said. This guy's desperate. He doesn't really know what to do. This is an unusual situation for him. Donald Trump is finally experiencing some accountability. He's not able to bully his way out of it, bullshit his way out of it, or delay it, or buy his way out of it. Everything he's always done his entire life is no longer working. And he's freaking the fuck out. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, he filed motions to delay or dismiss each day. He'll probably have one today and one tomorrow and maybe even one Saturday and Sunday. He's going to try everything. Now, I think the lawyers would say to him, that's not going to work. But I'm sure Donald Trump is saying, I don't give a shit. Just do it. Just do it. Because he thinks at some point he's going to be pulled from the fire, because he always has been. But what he doesn't understand is not this time. He's swimming in too big a pond. He's always been a big guy in a smaller pond. But now that you're on the governmental level, Congress and judicial system, and you have this much evidence, you don't have the kind of pull you once had. As I've said before, Donald Trump will look back in history, assuming he's still breathing, and realize, if he's got any kind of intelligence, that his biggest mistake was running for president and then winning the presidency. He could have lived his life under the radar, cheating, stealing, grifting, committing fraud, and nobody would have bothered him, because they hadn't bothered him for decades. But once he rises to this level and becomes a political person, well, then all that shit changes. And now he's experiencing it, and he doesn't know what to do with it. So Trump and his lawyers appeared in a New York appeals court yesterday to bring their third legal challenge to his upcoming criminal trial with the hush money and Stormy Daniels and the election interference and all that. Now, Trump's attorneys invoked a provision of the New York law known as Article 78, which allows litigants to seek relief from what they allege to be unlawful state or local government actions. The documents were filed under seal, but according to MSNBC, the challenge is related to immunity and other issues. By the DA's count, that's more than 10 attempts to adjourn his trial, 10 of them since this all started, 3 of them this week, and there will be more, and he'll continue to be denied. Also at issue for Trump and his lawyers is the alleged conflict from Judge Juan Marchand, who they want to remove from the case, pointing to his daughter's employment at a political firm that raised money for President Joe Biden's 2020 campaign. Well, the fact of the matter is that isn't illegal. That isn't a reason to recuse a judge. Now, if the judge did that, that's a different deal. But this is his daughter. His daughter and the judge are separate entities. The judge cannot be held responsible for those things that his daughter does. But Donald Trump is trying to make that happen. And unfortunately, it hasn't happened to this point, and it's not going to happen. He can keep saying it, say it different ways. It's still not going to work. Now, according to NBC News, Trump filed a separate Article 78 petition on Monday with the appellate division seeking to stop the trial because, according to Trump, he can't get a fair trial in Manhattan. Isn't that your home stomping grounds, Donald? Isn't that where all your businesses are? But that request got denied. On Tuesday, a separate judge denied Trump's request to delay the trial on while he appeals the unconstitutional gag order that Marchand leveled against him. Marchand has previously said that Trump's claim of presidential immunity doesn't apply to the hush money case because he failed to make the claim within a certain time. Not to mention the fact this all happened before he was president. It was during the campaign. Now, this court finds that the defendant had a myriad opportunities to raise the claim of presidential immunity well before March 7, 2024. That's what Juan Marchand, the judge, said. So you waited too long, Donnie. You tried to pull everything out, every stop out, and you just waited too long. But again, the fact of the matter is that all this happened before you were president. So how that applies to presidential immunity, I don't know. And the fact of the matter is that you don't even have presidential immunity. What's interesting, we've got a few things coming up. We've got the presidential immunity arguments being heard in the Supreme Court on April 25th. And a week from Monday, we have the hearing about Donald Trump's bond company, who is clearly illegitimate. So what could happen on that Monday, when they do have the hearing and they find out that this company is not qualified to post a bond, Letitia James could essentially start seizing and liquidating properties. They could start doing that. That's possible. And then 1 week after that, they've got the arguments for the immunity case. And when they say he doesn't have immunity, and make no mistake, that's what the Supreme Court is going to do. They bought Donald Trump a lot of time, but they can't possibly give him immunity. There's just too much bullshit tied to that, and that could cause all kinds of problems. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, if he gives him immunity, Donald or Joe Biden could say, let's put Donald Trump in jail. And let's take the Supreme Court, the Republicans in the Supreme Court, and just impeach those fuckers. Just get them out of there. We don't need to take it through Congress. They're fired. You think they want to do that? I don't think so. All right. I love this story. I've said so many times that Donald Trump has got to be the dumbest motherfucker I've ever seen. He's gone through so many lawyers. And now he's down to the bottom of the barrel. And they are some of the worst lawyers. We've seen how they've behaved in trials. They keep losing fucking trials. Part of the reason is they're stupid and incompetent. Part of the other reason is they take direction from Donald Trump, who has no legal acumen. And they do just whatever he says, no matter how embarrassing. Well, let's talk about embarrassing. Here's an absolutely hilarious, embarrassing thing that Donald Trump lawyers did and exposes them for their incompetence. Donald Trump's efforts to prepare for his New York hush money trial in just a few days, they had kind of a humiliating snag as his attorneys tried to subpoena former DA investigator Jeremy Rosenberg and accidentally brought in a different person with the same name. They subpoenaed the wrong motherfucker. They wanted the guy who was a former DA investigator Jeremy Rosenberg, but they sent a subpoena to the wrong address to another guy named Jeremy Rosenberg. Now, Jeremy Rosenberg, while he wasn't a DA, he was a smartass. And I like that in a guy. The bemused Rosenberg told Trump's legal team, I don't have any files for you. And he added, by the way, I'm keeping the $15 of the witness travel expenses. Commentators on social media platform wasted no time burying the former president and his legal squad in mockery over the mistake. And this has got to be tough on Donald Trump. As I've told you before, he hates being embarrassed. And this is absolutely stupid. I only hire the finest, smartest people. Well, not as lawyers, you don't, because they don't even know how to subpoena the right motherfucker. In other legal news, Trump's lawyers are so incompetent that they subpoenaed the wrong guy, wrote attorney Chris Sigurdson. When he replied he had no record for them, they complained to the judge that his response was flippant and disrespectful. Again, they subpoenaed the wrong guy. Like Rick Wilson of the Lincoln Project said, he always hires the best people. The level of stupid with this fucking clown show, wrote the popular account Machine Pun Kelly. Trump has the greatest legal team and I will 100% get acquitted, wrote the account Logan Henderson. And a fluent vulgarian said, so sharp, such morons. What a bunch of schmucks. That's absolutely true. They keep making these mistakes. They keep making these mistakes. Now, Alina Haba, or as I call her, Alibaba, she is Trump's lawyer. She was also Alan Weisselberg's lawyer. And Alan Weisselberg just recently fired her. And there's a couple of reasons for that. She's incompetent and worthless, and he's already pled guilty to perjury. Or he wants to get away from Donald Trump and maybe flip on Donald Trump. I'm starting to think he's still not ready to flip on Donald Trump. And frankly, after committing perjury in the Letitia James lawsuit, I don't know that he's a great candidate as a witness. But the good news is former Trump Organization CFO Alan Weisselberg Wednesday was sent back to Rikers Island facility that houses inmates with contagious diseases, city records show. You remember he spent about 100 days last time he was convicted of tax fraud, and now he's going back for perjury. Keep in mind, this is a guy in his mid-70s, old white guy who's wealthy, who's lived an easy life, got to do whatever he's wanted to do, committed fraud for Donald Trump for decades, even for his dad. He goes into Letitia James' lawsuit. He lies like a dumb fuck, and he gets sent back to Rikers Island, now this time on a five-month sentence. Now, he probably won't be there the whole 5 months, but he's probably going to be there for more than 100 days like he was last time, because that was a four-month sentence. But how much fun can it be for an old guy with a lot of money who's entitled to have to go sit in a cell in Rikers Island, of all things? Now, Weisselberg's new address at the West facility appeared on New York City's Correction Department website hours after he was sentenced following a guilty plea of two counts of felony perjury. The lockup at 16-06 Hazen Street in Queens houses inmates with contagious diseases as part of the Correction Department's Communicable Disease Unit, multiple city records show. Why would they send him there? I mean, here's a guy that's a little vulnerable to diseases being in his 70s, but that's where they sent him. Hopefully he'll catch something. The West facility also includes single-cell units separate from the ward, according to the department. It features in a recent New York One report about the detainees' report on conditions to Rikers Island Oversight Board. Virgil Carter reportedly said he was housed in the communicable disease unit for solitary confinement purposes. And I'm guessing Alan Weisselberg will probably be isolated, too. Jennifer Parrish of the Urban Justice Center told New York One detainees are locked in West facility units for up to 24 hours a day. That'll be fun for Alan, don't you think? Christopher Boyle of the New York County Defender Service said of solitary Rikers units, there are rats, there are mice droppings, there are insects all around. They are screaming for attention from officers who are basically ignoring them. Sounds like hell on earth. Sounds like it might be better than dealing with Donald Trump on a daily basis, but again, he's in his mid-70s. Probably not the best place for a guy like that. In December, one West facility detainee appeared in a New York Daily News report about accusations that he'd crept out of his locked cell, smashed a female officer's body camera, and bit her wrists. Oh, it sounds like a fun crowd. Now, Weisselberg, who served as Trump's family accountant, previously was sentenced to 5 months. Oh, it was 5 months, not 4 months, for tax evasion as part of the criminal investigation into the Trump Organization's accounting last year. He was released after serving 3 months. According to a Business Insider report from January 2023, this will be a return visit to the West facility for Weisselberg. Allen's back in jail. He didn't even have time to roll on Donald Trump. But as I say, after he just lied at Letitia James' lawsuit, he's probably not high on the priority list for witnesses. And frankly, when it comes to what's going on in the Manhattan District, I think they've got enough fucking evidence. They probably have evidence from his first trial and whatever information he got that they can corroborate. All right. Let's talk about another dumb fuck. Fox News host Sean Hannity called on Arizona Democrats to nix an abortion ban that was reinstated by the state Supreme Court this week. Yeah, Hannity's against this abortion ban in Arizona. Wonder why? Well, because he's one of the few that is smart enough, not stupid enough, to believe that this is a good thing for Republicans. He knows this is the death knell for Republicans. So on Tuesday, the High Court reinstated the law that traces back to 1864, subsequently codified in 1901. It bans nearly all abortions except those needed to save someone's life. The decision dropped a day after former President Donald Trump, who said it goes too far, came out against a nationwide ban on abortion in a move that disappointed many anti-abortion advocates, but also praised as politically savvy. It's not politically savvy. Since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade and the constitutional right to abortion in 2022, Democrats have leaned into the issues with great success. He can say what he wants. I won't sign a national abortion ban, but the fact still remains, and he's owned the fact that he is responsible alone for overturning Roe v. Wade. And I think he's right about that. He put the three justices in the Supreme Court. He was ranting and raving about this. He got his radical right fucks all wound up, and they went ahead and did it. Somebody's got to be responsible, and Donald Trump as much as said is, it's me. Now, Hannity, who opposes abortion, addressed the decision on Wednesday night and called on Democrats to legislate the ban out of existence. Now, let's think about that. Hannity, who opposes abortion, wants the Democrats to stop this thing in Arizona. He's against abortion, but he doesn't like this abortion ban in Arizona. That seems kind of weird. It's because Hannity and Donald Trump and none of these fucks give a shit about abortion. They care about what's politically expedient, what's going to get them votes. And Hannity is smart enough to know that this is a big loser for the Republicans. He said, and the people on the left are so desperately attacking Trump now for an Arizona Supreme Court ruling that upholds what is a Civil War era law banning abortion. This will be fixed in the next week or two. Let not your heart be troubled. I can pretty much assure that will happen. Well, it may, and it may not. See, again, Hannity understands this is bad news for Donald Trump. All along the way, he says, I want to send it back to the states. Well, that's what we did in Arizona, and that's what they did to America. That's what they did to the women of Arizona. So maybe your idea of giving it back to the states, Donnie, is not such a good one. They're going to have a hard time extracting Donald Trump from this whole abortion issue because he is at the core. Trump opposes the law and this ruling. This is what Hannity said. And you know what? Arizona governor is a Democrat. The state's attorney general is a Democrat. The state legislature is almost evenly divided. If Democrats, you want to get rid of the law, well, you have a chance right now to get rid of it. And I would advise you to get rid of it. They would rather use it as a political tool ahead of November. See what I mean? They're against abortion, but they want the Democrats to put in the work. They're encouraging the Democrats to put in the work to get this canceled because they know it's going to fuck them over. Trouble is currently Republicans control each chamber of Arizona's legislatures by two seats. Democrats attempted to repeal the measure on Wednesday, but were blocked by Republicans. So Hannity can appeal to the Democrats all they want. But if their own people, the Republicans, aren't willing to give, well, you're stuck with it. And this is what I've said. Unfortunately, I think with regards to the abortion issue, it's going to be a fucked up mess until after the election in November. If we can get Democrats in power in the House and the Senate, and of course, Joe Biden in the Oval Office, then we can get this fucking thing codified and make it a national proclamation, a national law. But up until that time, unfortunately, abortion is hanging around the neck of Donald Trump and Republicans. And this is what I said before. They thought they were doing something in 2022. And when the midterms came along, they said, whoops, we fucked up. But even still, instead of stepping back and trying to adjust it, they refused to admit they were wrong, and they just embraced it and doubled down. Now they find themselves 6 months out from the election, and they know they're fucked. and now they're trying to fix it. Too fucking late. Too fucking late. All right, let's go down to Florida as we're winding down the podcast. U.S. District Court Judge Aileen Cannon effectively eliminated the possibility that former President Donald Trump could go to trial in July for allegedly mishandling classified documents. In an order on Wednesday, Cannon said Trump had until May 9th to disclose which classified documents he would use for his defense. Guardian reporter Hugo Lowell pointed out that the special counsel Jack Smith had proposed March 18th for Trump to file his notice under Section 5 of the Classified Information Procedures, SEPA. That's not an unreasonable length of time to give Trump. It's typical to give defendants in that set cases several weeks to draft their Section 5 notice, so it's sufficiently specific. But a May 9th deadline might be frustrating for the special counsel, Lowell wrote on X. Special counsel proposed March 18th deadline for Trump to file his Section 5 notice in order to get to a July 2024 trial. He added, no way that is happening now, given the deadline is 7 weeks later. But she also didn't give Trump the June 17th deadline he wanted. So no 11th Circuit ammo either. Trump faces 37 criminal charges related to the illegal retention of classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago home. The charges include violations of the Espionage Act, conspiracy to obstruct justice, and making false statements to investigators. The most serious among them are 31 counts under the Espionage Act. And Cannon has yet to set a date for the trial. I'm going to say something here that will probably piss some people off. I don't care if the classified documents case happens before the election. The Manhattan case, when he gets convicted, may be sufficient enough to take him out of the mix, to crush him emotionally and even physically. We may not need that classified documents case to take him out. I mean, it will be devastating. It may be the most important case of all four cases. But imagine this. Say he gets taken out of the mix. He loses the election, which he will. And I'll talk about that in a moment. And then the classified documents case comes up after the election. That isn't such a bad deal if we've already neutralized and taken him out of the mix. Because whatever trials take place after the election, he now has no protection. He's not the president. He's not running for the presidency. By that time, the Republicans will have already walked away from it because he's worth nothing to them. They will have gotten wiped out, a blue wave in November. And at that point, they'll finally say, well, it looks like Donnie's done. He's cooked. He's toast. So we don't need him anymore. And if he goes into these trials, these very important trials after the election, he is absolutely fucked. He has no money. He has no power. He has no support. And he's fucking done. So, you know, maybe it works out okay as long as we can take him out of the mix for November and it's Manhattan District or maybe one of the others. That's enough. We don't need all four to come to pass before the election. And in fact, if some of them come after the election, it might be even better because he will get fucking crushed after he's already been crushed. I wanted to bring something else up. There was some Gallup polls that came out. A lot of people were coming to my page saying, oh my God, did you see this? It's so scary. And these Gallup polls weren't really polls on who was going to be president. It was more about who's more popular, Donald Trump or Joe Biden, okay? And these polls showed that Donald Trump might be more popular in certain circumstances, in certain circles, than Joe Biden. Everybody freaked out. That's what I've always said. People live on fear and react out of emotions. And that's where your mistake is. You don't do that. I've always said polls aren't a thing. Polls are pointless. They're constantly wrong. They were wrong in 2022 when they said there was going to be a red wave. Still, people want to bet on these polls that they have some legitimacy. Let me explain to you some things we don't know about the polls. We don't know who owns them, what their agenda is. We don't know who they're questioning. We don't know the questions that are being asked. As you heard in the emails, these questions can be really one-sided or leading or even worse. We don't know the questions that are being asked. We don't know that the questions aren't skewed, and chances are they are. We're not sure that the end result, the final data, isn't skewed. They're frequently wrong. We don't know anything about how these polls are done. But still, people will take them at their word and say, oh my God, this is terrible. So the question is, how do we determine the popularity of a candidate coming up to a presidential election? Well, polls are just smoke and mirrors. I've just pointed that out to you. We don't know anything about them. The only reason we give them any validity is because the media reports them as if they're something important or something that's true. But we know they are wrong frequently. If we could only have some hard data that would tell us who's more popular, Donald Trump or Joe Biden. Wait, there is a way. And I brought this up before. I'm going to bring it up one more time. I'm tired of people whining about fucking polls. How about fundraising? Now think about this. With fundraising, we have lists of people and their names who donated to a given candidate, right? It's real easy to figure out who did it and what they did. And imagine this. What is a better example of somebody that supports a candidate than somebody who goes into their pocket, their own pocket, pulls as much money as they can and gives it to that candidate? To me, that seems like the essence, the absolute essence of support, as opposed to some guy sitting on his couch in a pile of Doritos saying, yeah, I like Trump. These people took money out of their pockets and donated it to Joe Biden. And here's what's interesting about Joe Biden's donation. 96% of them come from people donating $200 or less. That means there's tens of thousands of people that are donating to Joe Biden. Remember, in the last quarter, he collected $190 million. But if you really want to determine who's more popular using this hard data, this factual data that can be documented and proven, in the last quarter, Joe Biden raised twice as much as Donald Trump. Donald Trump is so shaken by that, he has to go out and lie that he got $50 million in a fundraiser that had 117 people in it. We find out later that nobody really gave money. It was all pledges, and those pledges will go away the moment he's convicted of a felony in the next couple of months. So if you really want to determine who has the support and how much support they have, I dare say that fundraising tells us that Joe Biden has double the support of Donald Trump, just based on fundraising. You got to follow the money. Where is the money coming from and who is it going to? Well, most of it is going to Joe Biden. Now, if Donald Trump was so close in the race against Joe Biden, wouldn't it make sense that he would have as much money in his coffers as Joe Biden? The funny thing is, he isn't. He doesn't. I mean, part of it might be taking the money out and paying for his legal fees. But this is about money that's coming in, not how much money he has on hand. And he doesn't have much. Is maybe a third of what Joe Biden has on hand. It doesn't make any sense to me that polls tell us that they're neck and neck or even Donald Trump is winning when the fundraising tells us an entirely different story. And to me, that is a more credible way to determine the support for a given candidate. And from what I see from fundraising, Joe Biden's got twice the support. And that'll be right in line with what I'm thinking. Because I think if Donald Trump and Joe Biden are the candidates in November, Joe Biden's not only going to win, he's going to devastate Donald Trump. A lot of people won't agree with me, but I got to tell you what, when November comes along, and if it happens that way, I'm going to be a laughing, crowing motherfucker. I guarantee you that. All right, we are going to wrap up the Rational Boomer podcast. I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen. I hope you have a great day, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Rational Boomer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We'll see you next time.